This is Alex Ragone at LearningBlog.org, podcasting from Central Park East, New York, New York, on Tuesday, April 18th, 2006. The following is a recording of a professional development day that I led on Thursday, April 13th, 2006. The topic was blogging, wikis, and podcasting in the classroom. Please email me with any questions or comments at alex.ragone@gmail.com.
Thanks, Lee. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Maggie's back. Yay. I've been told to speak slowly and in complete sentences. And I'm going to try really, really hard to do that. And if I'm not, please, somebody wave at me and say makes sense. Thanks, Lee. So today we're going to talk about what's being coined as the read-write web. And there definitely has been a shift in internet technologies over the past 3 to 5 years that's pretty drastic. And what I want to start with today is a little film, I guess, that was created. And I first saw this film in the fall, and it had been... The reason I saw it, I was listening to On the Media on NPR on Saturday, and they had the person who had written this film interviewed, and it was a journalist from, I think, St. Louis, who had written the script for this piece. And it's kind of a history up until now of the internet, and then it goes up until 2014. And so when you hit 2005, it becomes fiction. And it's an interesting little film. So we're going to start with that, and then we'll come back and talk about the read-write web in the classroom. Hopefully my internet connection will work.
At this point, I played the short film Epic 2014. You can download this by going to http://epic.makingithappen.co.uk or Googling Epic EPIC 2014.
It's a little scary, huh? So what does that mean? I mean, you know, we're talking about 2006 to 2014 is fictional, but what does that mean to us as teachers and our kids, if that is any amount real? And so I guess what I'm asking all of you to think about today is the world our boys are going to walk into tomorrow, or in 14 years, or in 20 years for the students, for my kids. And really seriously think about what we're doing as an activity that is a place that they're going to be immersed in for their entire lives. And take it seriously, because it is very, very serious for them. As well as have some fun, because I hope that today can be fun. So the read-write web, what's happened in the last few years, and you saw as part of that video, is that people have been able to interact with the web in more ways than we could imagine. And I would say that we're dealing with something that can be a tool that can be used to enhance learning by providing our students more ways to reflect and interact with the information that they have available to them. And I would also say that if we don't want what they were talking about in 2014 there, I mean, at best, it's the most vast amount of information ever available to man, right? At worst, it's a thin, flat, surface-level perspective of the world, right? So I think those are serious questions that we need to start thinking about right now. So here's some stats, just, you know, for informational purposes, right? So 11 blogs, right, which is basically, and I'll give a definition of a blog. A blog is a website that allows a person or a group of people to post opinion pieces. And they can be fact opinion pieces. I mean, I've read blogs which have academic papers posted on them with links to their resources, or they could be your kids saying, hey, I went out last night and this is what I did. And they range that spectrum. 11% or 50 million of internet users are regular blog readers. There's 70,000 new blogs a day. 700,000 new posts a day, okay? Wikipedia, all right? So we're going to talk about wikis. Wikis, all wiki means is a quick, easy way to edit a web page, and I'll show you some of that later. But Wikipedia is this online encyclopedia that anyone can edit. And we can argue about the values of that media till the sun goes down, and it's still going to be here. It's the 17th highest traffic site on the internet. Boys here use it all the time. 20 million words a month it grows. So that means people are contributing 20 million words in English, just in English. These are just English language stats. And it's had 49,875 million edits since July of 2002, okay? So here's some Read Write Web blog history, right? Howard Dean, some would say that he almost won the Democratic nomination in 2004 because of his blog for America and because he was interacting with people all the time. He posted his platform up and said, I want to hear what you think about this, and created what a conversation about his politics. 10,000 people donated $40 or more, and on an average of $80, right? That I think that that's probably in history not the normal way to run a political campaign, right? 10,000 people, okay? That's what's called grassroots, I would say. And in terms of Wikipedia and blogging, during the tsunami, the London bombings, and Katrina, people started posting information immediately in Wikipedia as they got it. And in some respects, some would argue that the information in Wikipedia was more helpful than the government agencies publishing information, because there are people on the ground saying, this is what happened, this is what's going on, here are relief agencies, and it became a portal for people, especially at the London bombings, a portal for people on the ground who needed help. They would go to Wikipedia to find help. On the Indian Ocean disaster, this is actually really interesting. If you go, wikis allow you to go all the way back to the first posting, so they actually hold their history. So if you click on the history tab, it shows you every edit that's ever been made in the wiki. So you can go back and see who edited it, or at least see what was edited. And if you go to the earliest posting, so this is the day, December 26, 2004, right, at 9:03. This is the first post, and it says, this article is a current event. Information may change rapidly, right? And this person posted a magnitude 8.9 undersea earthquake struck the Indian Ocean off the coast of Sumatra, Indonesia, on December 26th, local time. The earthquake triggered massive tsunamis, popularly known as tidal waves, which struck coastal areas of India, Indonesia, Thailand, and Sri Lanka. The known death toll is over 500. That brings it home, right? How many people died in the tsunami? It's kind of scary. So I think that this type of information, we can debate how it's used and the potentials of it, but it's pretty amazing when you think of that, that kind of information. And the fact that it started that day, December 26th, somebody created a post, and it was edited hundreds of thousands of times since then. Dan Rather, some would say that bloggers brought Dan Rather down when he posted the post about the Bush's papers that were eventually proved incorrect and a forgery. A blogger picked it up that day and went and created the document on his laptop, posted it to his blog, and said, how can Rather, has he verified that information? And that created a swell in the blogosphere of people quoting this guy and talking about how Rather could have been lying, and he retired 6 months later. So there's, you know, definitely things to think about this. This is from last Sunday, thanks to Jim Reynolds, who reads the New York Times, which I don't, enough at least. This is the public editor. So blogging has made its way to the New York Times. Across the paper's website, blogs run by assigned staffers and are posting opinions and information they consider insightful on topics such as dining, wine, real estate, and the financial world. And the Times has a bunch of drawing boards, Jonathan Landman, the deputy managing editor, told me Tuesday. So the Times, they have blogs on business. They have blogs on their wine and food page. So blogs, if the New York Times is doing it, anybody know how long it took the New York Times to pick up crossword puzzles? The crossword puzzle phase was in like the teens, you know, and it took them like 18 years to put their first crossword puzzle in the New York Times. They were like the last national newspaper to put a crossword puzzle in the newspaper. And the blogosphere has been around since 2002, and the Times now has blogs. So you see how time is getting shorter. So what are we going to do now? Our department and our division heads and the small committee of people that were put together to talk about today debated whether or not I should stand up here and talk to you for 45 minutes now, put you all to sleep, and then go into an activity, or for me to talk for 20 minutes and then send you off to an activity and then come back and talk about blogging and wikis and podcasting. So I decided that I was going to give you a little video, a little bit of background, and then we're going to go and blog. So I'm going to show you what we're going to do right now for the next hour. So between now and 10:30, there's a list on the back door. We're going to go and go there. People are assigned to the fifth floor, the sixth floor, or the seventh floor. So you'll go to the list, find out where you're going to go upstairs. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to go to Collegiate Connect, okay? And there's a link in the middle that says Faculty Professional Development Day. You're going to click on that. And that's a link to a wiki, an editable webpage that I can only edit right now, but that has an agenda of what today is. So we're here, goal of day. We're running 10 minutes behind, 15 minutes behind. That's normal, right? So what are blogs and wikis? I think I've kind of defined that. And now we're going into our blogging immersion. So we in the department have set up a blog that has topics of interest, I think, to everybody, personal things. We're not doing a really serious blog. You're welcome to post on the Epic 2014 segment we just watched. But there are books, food, home renovation, movie blog, parenting blog, photography, travel, New York City cultural events, and sports. And what we want you to do is to go to your assigned space and write and share information with us and create a blog that's has information that would be helpful to other people at Collegiate or interesting. Where have you gone? What's a good trip? And the way you're going to do that is you can go to your food blog and recommend a favorite restaurant in the world or recommend a favorite restaurant in New York City. Recommend a quick and easy recipe, all right? So you're going to click on the link, and what it'll do is take you to this page where you can put your name in. I'd like this right now. This page is on the internet, so anyone posting to it, if you just use your first name right now, we're going to take the information and summarize it and put it in a place that's not public. But for now, we're posting on this blog. And so you'll post your first name, your email address. You don't have to put a website in. And you'll say, I'm having a lamb for Easter. This is not a very simple recipe. And then I'm going to submit my comment. And that shows up now, right, as a comment to that blog post. And this is what's called the conversation of the blogosphere, because people will post ideas and thoughts, and then other people will respond and create a conversation. So what I'm hoping we'll do over the next hour is create some interesting conversations that will entertain you, be informational for you, and will get you into blogging as an activity. All right? Questions?
Yes.
Can everybody keep it down for a second, please? So that's a very good question. If you go back up to the top and click, you can either go back twice to the wiki page where you can click on one of the other links, okay? So you can go to the book blog, or you can click on the Professional Development Day thing at the top, and on the right hand side over here it has all the categories: books, food, home renovation. And that allows you to go through all the topics. So if I want to look at the food area, I can click on food again and see the three questions that are up there, or three topics. And then you'll see that there's one comment on that, and you can click on it and see what people have to say and read through those. So I encourage you all, post something and then go and read what other people are posting and add to the conversation. All right? Question?
When you post, does that mean your email address is
also? No, it is not. It's just your name. It gets entered as a verification thing. It's a spam. It's because people spam blogs as well, and I've restricted it so only collegiateschool.org people can post to these blogs. So what that allows us to do is restrict who can post to these.
So if you're posting, so taking this beyond today's activity at school, if you're posting to a blog, does your email address get posted?
No. If you put a website in, it does. But most of the blog software that I've used out there does not post your email address. The owner of the blog has access to it, so if they want to send you an email, they can, but it's not posted on the internet. All right? So I'll see you back here at 10:30.
We then split into three groups and headed to our computer labs. I set up a WordPress blog with interesting topics for faculty to add. You can see a sample of this blog at profdev.edublogs.org. That's profdev.edublogs.org. After this exercise, I asked the faculty to brainstorm ideas about how to use blogging in their classrooms. I hope this exercise would prime their thoughts before showing them examples of how other folks are using these technologies around the world in their classrooms. For privacy's sake, I will read you some of their ideas. They suggested using blogs to pose questions on current events and elicit answers from students, using blogs to have virtual discussions of novels, plays, of video clips, or of homework assignments, using blogs to have a conversation about writing sentences and using appropriate punctuation. We discussed modeling good writing for students within that context, using blogs to motivate younger students to journal and make diary entries, and to use blogs to augment class conversation by having an outside expert comment on the blog. What follows is the end piece of blogs, listing, wikis, and podcasting. I hope you enjoy.
So on Matt's point, I have a quick reading. There's this guy who lives in New Jersey named Will Richardson, and he's probably the most famous educational blogger in the world. And I'm not joking, in the world. I mean that. The guy started blogging in 2002. He was a journalism and literature teacher. And then he became the director of instructional technology at a regional high school in the middle of New Jersey. It has 3,200 kids. It's like Gold Star High School. And he just a few months ago decided to leave that job to become a full-time blog evangelist, basically to do the conference circuit and to do consulting for schools. And he's going to do it. He's a pretty amazing person. But he wrote this book called Blogs, Wikis, and Podcasts. And In his chapter about blogging, he wrote this, or quoted Ken Smith, who's a writing instructor at Indiana University. So this is a description of blogging. Instead of assigning students to go write, we should assign them to go read and then think to what interests them and write about it, about why it does and what it means. Not in order to make connection or build social capital, but because it is through quality linking that one first comes in contact with essential acts of blogging. Close reading and interpretation. Blogging at base is writing down what you think when you read others. If you keep at it, others will eventually write down what they think when they read you, and they'll enter a new realm of blogging, a new realm of human connection. And what I want to show you is, if you, so I just Googled Bees Richardson, and you see this first link, it says The Secret Life of Bees. In 2002, Will Richardson had his literature class. They were reading The Secret of Life of Bees. It was on the New York Times bestseller list. He had the kids, basically what their assignments were, each student was required to post their thoughts on a chapter, and their thoughts could be in text or in images. And you'll see as you browse through this, you see some of them, you know, it's chapter one, two, chapter two. And as they went through, they started to post actual pictures, an artistic interpretation of chapter two. And so they were bringing in different media into the blog. And while Will was doing this, he invited the author to come and read the blog. This is on the internet. There are definitely some rules and regs he had defined for his students in terms of it being on the internet. But anyone can comment on these. So as students posted their chapter highlights, there are other classmates came in and commented. Parents were asked to go and read what the students were doing to comment. And so there was a conversation about each one of these posts. And you'll see, you know, chapter 9 art. And it gets more sophisticated. It's pretty interesting what they're, as their artwork, as they go. And their writing is very sophisticated. I'm not going to read any of it right now. But over here, there's a link to Sumung Kid, who's the author, and they emailed back and forth, and then she read the blog, and she responded with a 3,400 word response to their student questions on her after reading their blog. So this, you know, New York Times bestselling author read these kids in a high school in New Jersey their interpretations of her work, and in a couple of quotes said, you helped me see my work in different ways. You created a new lens for me to look at my work, and she was very grateful for what they did. And did you see what I did? I Googled Bees Richardson, right? And it was the number one hit next to, if you go down a little bit, like Amazon's not even up there. If you Google The Secret Life of Bees, Amazon is below their hit, which means that the most people on the internet link to his site as opposed to the Amazon.com site to buy that thing. So if you Google, so thousands, it's had like millions of reads on this page of people around the world looking at this site. Now, I'm not saying that that's what we want to do with blogs. What I'm saying, for those kids, this was an amazingly compelling reason to write and to interact, and it really made learning come alive for them because they got to interact with this author in a way that they couldn't have done before that without having the author come in and talk to them. So that's, you know, that's my first kind of blogging example. We've been experimenting a little bit here. Mr. Rubenstein in our math department has a blog, and he created a homework assignment for his sixth graders a few weeks ago. And this is a really interesting question. He asked them to all go and create a problem. Okay, so your assignment is to keep the chain going. This is a chain assignment. So you want to solve the previous problem and then check the solution of the person before. If he gets the previous problem wrong, you don't correct it. It's your fault too. And then write a new problem that's easily solvable by the entire class. And so this is creating the having the kids think about their problem that they have to solve, and then thinking about what a good problem is for their next student to solve. And if you look, they all went through, and you got, and Dan gave an example, right? And then the next guy posted a question, and it took him a few posts to get the rhythm down, but as you go down, you have answer, new question, a pizza pie's diameter is 8 inches. If your friend only wants 47% of the pie, what would be the area of the fraction of the pie you gave him? You give him, use the correct units. So they create this interaction on this assignment. These are sixth graders. And, you know, it's very interesting. Some of the guys actually go into their work, and, you know, you get silly kids say, okay, and, you know, that's just part of the, that can be part of the process. But I think Barbara's comment is very important, that we do talk to them about appropriate use of these kinds of technologies. So that's what Dan did, which I think is a great example. Pam used a blog in her sixth grade tech class in the fall to do some really interesting work, where she would put up a picture of something and say, "What do you think this is?" And they were studying ancient civilizations, and she had a picture of salt. Where's Pam? What was the picture of salt? I can't remember. It was. And so she put this picture up and asked the kids to hypothesize what that picture was of, which was, you know, a very interesting exercise. And then eventually they got it. And I think that that's another great example of using a blog. Jim and I have been experimenting in his journalism class, or he's allowed me to experiment with his guys in his journalism class. And what I would say about that experience is, for me, we haven't gotten a rhythm where the kids have been using it really effectively yet. And I think that that's one of the things that could be bad about this, is just learning. I mean, it's a learning process to figure out how it can be used effectively. And that's one of the reasons why I'm trying to read as much as I can and look at the resources that are out there and give you good models to use, is that I don't want people to spend as much time as Jim and I have to get it going. Although I have read a good number of people who've talked about it taking 8 to 10 weeks to get kids into a rhythm in any grade of using this, because it is a new place to write. Our lower school class teachers, this is kind of cool. There's the theme unit at the end of each year in lower school, and our lower school teachers used a wiki, which again is just an editable web page. To post all of their curriculum guides. So instead of a curriculum map, they used a wiki. So there's fourth grade, third grade, second grade. We have community ideas as well as links. So any link that happened that people came up with, instead of posting it to a conference, they collected most of them here. I'm not going to say all of these. I'm sure some slipped by. But if you look at the fourth grade, I'm sorry for picking on the fourth grade teachers, but they wrote what was going on in their class so that anybody in the lower school can read what was going on in other classes and see what their ideas were. So here you have your change, your social studies work, Structure University. So they have Structure University, which is one of their themes, and it shows what concepts they're going through. So I think that this is a place where faculty can collaborate and share. In the technology department, we've been using wikis to work on joint documents. It's a good space to be able to edit. And what's nice about a wiki, and this is one of Ryan's ideas, you can go to the history and see what the edits were along the way and who edited it. And Ryan thought in an English class you could use it to actually write an entire paper and then go back and see what the edits were and how the student edited the paper. And I think that that would be a really interesting process of looking at edits and bringing things to a higher level, Barbara. In that respect. So you can actually go in and see, like, all the red and pink and the pink and green here. If you click on it, it shows you what was edited the last time somebody went in.
I don't find it this.
Yeah, sure. So what it does is every time you press save, just like if you're in a Word document, right, and every time you press save, it remembers what changes you made the last time. So you have a memory of what you changed along the way in your wiki. So this shows they deleted period one and added building structures with our bodies on that first line. And so in an English class or a history class or any writing class, you could actually look at the history and the progress of a student's writing.
As it in the small scale?
Yeah, I mean, up here, this is just a thumbnail, so it shows you what kind of edits happened along the way. And it gives you a history of when they were edited. So that's what the way our lower school teachers have been using this. There's this guy. The Canadians are all over blogging. I have to say, the Canadians and Australians are way ahead of people of the rest of the world on this. And they have a. This guy is a Natasha. He's a calculus teacher though. But he's got, this is amazing. This calculus teacher in Canada has all of his students, assigned to be something called a scribe. And that scribe is required to write what they did in class that day. And this is like, wow, this is what this kid wrote probably on Thursday, today, right? Wow, it surprises me that I lasted this long in this course. I really had no idea. This is a calculus, right? So it's a calculus AB course. I really had no idea that I'm so close to finishing it. I'm telling you guys, it's pretty tough. It was pretty tough along the way. The thought of quitting had crossed my mind hundreds of times already. I felt like this, like though the entire span of this class, I was always hanging onto the ropes. But Mr. K, he stretched his arm, reached for me, and pulled me through. I wouldn't be surviving this class without you. This was posted this morning. I've never read this before. Can you imagine if one of your kids told you that? Right? And these kids are writing this on the internet, okay? I think that kind of work is pretty amazing. And he actually goes through and you can see, like, the problems, four-color problems. And this is one of these scribes where they actually go through and note what happened that day in class and explain it to their other classmates. And what he does is comment on what they're writing and add, and the kids can comment and add things and take things away. And there's some amazing thought process behind being the scribe for that day and having to share their work. And what he assigned them, he actually told them, he said, I want you to write a post that we could use for the textbook next year, as the textbook. So I think that the writing here is sophisticated and the scaffolding is appropriate. He does. He actually has people translating his blog into different languages. Yeah. So if you want to read it in French or whatever, you can. We can read it in Chinese. Yeah. Yeah, it's really, sure.
You can, or your students can, from the class and, like, have the snapshot of what's
yeah.
in the class on there.
Yeah, no problem at all. Putting images into a blog is very easy. So this is in Chinese.
Japanese.
Sorry.
Yes. Wait, is this a blog or a wiki?
This is a blog. So this is a blog. Wiki is an editable webpage, and I'll tell you if we're in a wiki. But these kids, so everybody, what happens in this class is all of the kids are able to post on this blog as users, and that they all post journals and they're assigned, and he just has a rotation, so they go through, and every couple of weeks each kid is a scribe and has to write what they did the last class as part of their assignment for that night. Mark.
Just following on Sarah's question, so a blog, whoever posts, once it's posted, it can't be edited.
Yeah, it can be edited by the person who posts, but not by a group of people. No.
And
yeah.
Wiki, everything's
depending on how you set up a wiki, like the lower school wiki, only the lower school teachers can edit it and only
but
the lower school but anyone who's part of that community can edit. Yeah.
Okay.
How do you set up a blog and a wiki? Do we talk to you?
Yeah, definitely. And that's one of the things that we're working on. I mean, this is meant to give you an exposure to the concepts. I'm not expecting any of you to walk out of here and say, I'm ready to go. I think that the process here is to expose you to some ideas and thoughts on this and then go to the next level in terms of if you want to go and actually use one of these in your classroom, you would come to us. I also want to say, in terms of the comments in Flickr that Michael pointed on, I actually used a couple of the... Sorry. I actually used a couple of the kids... I just stepped on the power cord. In my photography class, we had kids posting blog posts and commenting on each other's pictures. And I actually, in my midterm comments, used some of their quotes that they wrote about each other in the midterm comments, because they were really amazing comments. I mean, there were things that I couldn't have thought about writing in their work. And so I think that collaboration in terms of them scaffolding each other's work and commenting on each other's work, I think is very powerful.
Alex?
Yes?
Can I just ask, is a blog and or a wiki absolutely limitable to a specific community?
Yes.
So that there's no danger that it just goes to the entire world?
This is one of those things that a blog can be restricted to our community. A blog can be
absolutely
for the entire world. Absolutely, yes, right. It can. There are some bloggers in the educational realm who would say that by restricting it, you restrict the conversation that can be had. And just like Sumon Kidd commented on those kids' blog, the only way she could do that is by being part of that community and seeing it. I think that there are a lot of questions we need to ask about how open you want it to be. I want to be able to limit who sees what and do it appropriately. But there are a lot of rules that bloggers, that like Darren in Canada, this math guy, have about the way they blog for the kids. And they actually have like special forms that they send home to parents, because these are public school environments, where they say kids are only allowed to use their first names online. They're not allowed to share any personal information. If they do get comments that are vulgar or rude or objectionable, they should bring it to the administration or faculty's attention right away.
But there's no danger that crazy guy from wherever in the world can just invade this whole community?
Well, we looked at that AP Calculus blog. Anybody in the world can read that right now. We read it, what a kid posted this morning. What I would say is that because those kids are posting with just their first names, and it's an apcal.blogspot.com, it doesn't even say where they are in the world. It's like identifying them on the internet would be very difficult unless you had other information about that student. So I think the internet allows anonymity in your writing, that if you have a teacher scaffolding the writing, I think it can be very appropriate. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, even if it's open to the whole internet. And I think some of us will be very comfortable with that, and some of us won't. And I think that it's going to depend on who you are and what the potential use of that blog will be, how you choose to have who accesses it.
Alex?
Yes.
I think there's a different issue, too, though.
Yes, sure.
And so, and I think the answer I'd like to hear is much more explicit. If we had a faculty blog, if I had a question for the faculty,
yes.
I'm not worried about anonymity.
Yes.
I'm worried about access. I don't want parents to see it. I don't want students.
Yeah, and that's and you can set that up so that
you want to hear, that you can absolutely restrict.
Yes.
To an very narrowly.
Yes. You can absolutely restrict things to a narrow population.
Right.
I want to show you, because
there was one more question over here.
To a narrow, if we wanted, would it be technically difficult to say faculty or would it be technically difficult to say
no.
Upper school students.
No.
Would it be technically difficult to say Sydney Child's 11th grade English class only?
No.
So that everyone has, because not every student wants everyone else.
I agree. Yes.
Okay, so we can do that.
Yes.
Cool. Thank you.
I want to just hit a couple.
Alex, can I just ask one question? If I can remember it. On the wiki space that we're doing in the lower school.
Yes.
Since you're saying it's like an editable web page, can we also be putting images on?
Yes.
So it's not just text that we can.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, you can put images, you can put video.
Is there a way to use the wiki spaces as an easy way to create, for example, a third grade web page?
Yes.
Where we only, the teachers can edit it, but the students can view it?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. I want to play this. This is a third and fourth grade mixed classroom in Maine, and they're going to tell you about a little project they're doing. This is a presentation they were doing. This is just audio right now.
I'm Paige, and I'm the and this is the fourth graders in our class went to the University of Southern Maine. We got asked to do a presentation on how to do a podcast for the third graders couldn't make it, so they made a movie. You can watch it on our website. Hey, Bailey, how do you think the presentation went?
I think it went well. We got a little stuck at times, but I think that we could memorize a lot of our parts. Well, why don't we listen to it now?
Okay. Thank you for coming today. We're ready to start our presentation. I'm Bailey, and we're the Classroom Room Toy Podcast. We live in Wells, Maine. I have eight other friends with me here today. They are Cassidy, Haley, Emily, and Matt. We all have this word. We hear that you have teachers as partners. Well, we do too. This is our partner, Mr. S. He comes to have these podcasts. He is a great teacher and director. The third graders have also prepared a movie for you. Here's Captain with our purpose. Hi, I'm Cassie, and I'm going to be telling you what the purpose of today is. We read a brochure on kids. We got a purpose and a master objective from the brochure. In our school, we have something called a master objective. A master objective is something that's going to be telling you what you're going to be doing in that period of time. The first objective we have for you today is dancing on the air. That means that we're going to be helping you make a podcast today. In fact, we're making a podcast right now.
So their first objective was to give these other students, these are fourth graders, who are teaching other fourth graders with their teachers at the University of Maine how to create a podcast, how to create audio that can be distributed over the internet. They also created this video. These are the third graders in their class narrating a little video on what a podcast is. And so I don't have to explain it to you because they do a great job at it. Trying to switch programs. There we go.
Hi, we're Sam from 2A, and this is how we make a podcast.
We do a rundown every Monday at snack. We figure out who is doing what. Like, me and Bailey always do a math one. We have to write what the piece is, who is doing it, if it's written, mixed, and edited. The rundown is so everything is organized.
Hi, we are going to tell you the gear you use in the podcast.
All you really need is a computer,
but you might want something more portable. We first started out with the iRiver. The iRiver is really cheap and it's great to use.
But then Mr. Sprinkle won $1,000 and we got an Adderall, which is great for recording our podcast. We also bought handheld mics and mic stands. We bought a mixer and headphones too. And that's all you need to make a podcast.
Oh yeah, don't forget the kids.
On our podcast, we have different corners. Elizabeth's Arc is one of the many corners on our podcast. We have some new corners this year, like writing with Emily.
Corners are on one topic. We get to make up the corners as long as it's appropriate.
Like, because we want them to be funny, but also we want them to be kind of weird. And actually, we do want them to be weird.
every podcast has a student in it. We do student interviews so that we can tell what we're doing in the school. First, a few people pick a topic for their groups. Then each group goes off and writes about their topic. Once each group is finished, we all come together and edit each group's work. Well, when all the groups come together, well, sometimes like people argue about stuff, but then like at the end it usually works out. Student news usually takes about 1 or 2 days. And then it only takes a few minutes to record. We teach other people in our podcast as well.
So they teach other people in their podcasts. And I think that this is an example of this video cast. They did it once, and the teacher actually said he wouldn't do it again because it took too long for him to actually mix. But that's an example of how people are using this kind of technology in lower school classrooms. And all a podcast is, or that video cast is a link in a blog to an audio or video file. So it's just like if you go to NPR, how many people have got to NPR and like clicked on one of their streaming videos or audio? It's the same thing. And so you can get to those places by just going to the Room 208 podcast and grabbing this information. And these kids at Room 208 have had conversations with people. At one point in that original audio file, they talk about talking to people in Japan and China and having conversations about the work they're doing. They also had the great honor of being presented at a keynote at a technology conference where faculty, where people in the audience said, these kids aren't making this. This isn't real. And so the kids, I've followed their podcast for the last couple months, and each podcast at the end, they have letters, and they have people writing them saying, we know you do the podcasts, and they comment on these letters and the conversation that's happening on their podcast. So it's a really powerful way. And I think it's pretty amazing when you think about these are third and fourth graders, what kind of level of work they're doing. Don?
I still don't know what a podcast is.
Okay. It's a, all it is.
Just a video clip?
Yeah. Well, a podcast, all it is an audio, it's an MP3 file on a blog. So it's a link to a sound file on a blog. And so it allows you to download that and listen to it. That's it.
Confusing it with a broadcast, which means somebody else decides when I get to see it.
Yes, it's like you can listen to a podcast at any time because it's just an audio file on the internet.
It's just a file.
Yes, it's just a file.
You said on a blog. Does it have to be on a blog, or can it be on any kind of website?
We can argue about the it could be on any website. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there are some really geeky technical people that would say unless it's on a blog, it's not a real podcast because of the way you can get it. But on any website, it's pretty much.
But Alex, it's different from something you can stream.
Yes, this is
a file that you can yourself
download. Yes. Right. Yeah, Maggie streams audio content in her classroom, and that you have to click on the website and go through the website. This you can download and put it on your MP3 player and walk away with it. Hence podcasting.
What streaming
means that you click on a link and it actually comes right off of a server. And like I stream the BBC at night.
Right. But the BBC also podcasts some of it.
Yes, right. So you can get like the highlights, the news highlights every hour in a podcast. So if you're sitting at a computer, you can stream because you have a connection to the internet.
Right.
But if you have your MP3 player that you're carrying around in your pocket and you want to listen to it on the subway, you need to download a file onto that device. Bill? Bill? You had a question? Joe, do you want to?
Is there a tool on the blog to upload your podcast?
Yeah, it's real. It's just an uploaded file.
It shows you?
Yeah.
It shows you
it's like attaching a file to an email. Yeah.
They have a little piece of software called a Podcatcher.
Yes.
And you can download it. It's very small. And then you can produce on their site. But it's very handy. And you don't have to worry about files and keeping them and all that. They keep a list
The BBC has a great guide as well. The BBC and NPR have wonderful guides on all of this stuff. I would highly recommend you go check them out. Judith, and then I need to move on.
Well, I just want to understand. So if you have like a podcast and you download it to MP3 player,
yes,
then you can take it anywhere you want.
Yeah.
So how does that speak to the privacy issue of keeping it in the...
Well, I mean, I think that we would have to decide whether or not you want it to be public or private. I mean, we have Collegiate Connect, which has a lot of private space behind a password, which you could put a lot of this technology into. And one of the things I have a dialogue with Whipple Hill continuously about is how to get more of this technology behind a password where they want it to be. But again, Room 208 podcast, those kids that's on the internet, they don't password protect it, but they have really strict guidelines. They only use first names. You know, you don't know where Room 208, you know they're in Wells, Maine, but, you know, so there is some anonymity. Don?
MP3 is just audio?
Yes. And that video isn't, yeah, but you can podcast video as well. I'm showing you something, and I think that there has to be a long conversation about it. I'm giving you what people are doing out there. I think that there's a long conversation about using this kind of technology in the classroom. But with Collegiate Connect, you can put this stuff behind the password for parents to have access to lower school information or middle school or whatever. I think that I think what Mark's question was right on. We need to be able to define what kind of password protected you use.
Alex?
Yes.
Have you ever been hacked?
No.
You're sure?
Yeah. I know servers that have been, though, secure servers. And one of the reasons I said we're looking at...
That's the bottom line on this issue, right? Because if you could hack it, then you could get access to stuff.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're putting it on, most people can't hack, but somebody can.
And I think that... Citibank can get hacked.
Right.
Okay, I need to stop. I'm happy to answer any questions after this that you have.
1 o'clock to 3 o'clock. Can we ask more questions?
Yes.
Where?
I'll stay here.
Right here?
Yeah. From one, I have a 1:30 in the art department, but other than that, I'm happy to answer any questions. There are a couple of other things that I just want to mention. Global Voices Online is a program from the Harvard's Berkman Center, which is in their law school. And what they do is look at blogs around the world in different countries, and they summarize them in their blog. So they have people who know Arabic and read Iraqi blogs, and then move those into this Global Voices website. So you can actually read what people are saying in different countries around the world today or yesterday. And so this is China's, and it gives you an idea of, this is a blogger in China who said, in China, the disappearance of blogs has become part of blogging life, not an accepted part, however, more than just badges of blogger honor. The increasing number of Chinese blogs which have been blocked or deleted also serve as an indicator of just how many Chinese people find themselves at odds with the Chinese Communist Party. Now, this is a person in China blogging about government. I mean, this... Yeah, it was. There you go. So, I think in the global environment we're in, this kind of resource could be very good for your classrooms. And I'm going to end it there. I can show people how to video cast or you podcast with video or audio at any time.
This has been a production of learningblog.org. Please leave comments at www.learningblog.org.